Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Next guest has become something of a regular on Spirit, even though he lives in Missouri in the US, because he is an ethicist who is not afraid to tackle some of the toughest material, the toughest moral dilemmas faced in the world today. He recently brought out a book which looks at just war theory, or what he prefers to call the just war tradition, and how it applies to the 21st century. The scope of the book, which he co-edits, is breathtaking. It doesn't just shy away from tricky topics. Lines up a team of highly qualified ethicists who run the rule over issues like drones and cluster bombs and the idea of torture, nuclear testing, humanitarian intervention, and women in combat. So, hey, you know, all the easy stuff that you can talk about. It's called Can War Be Just in the 21st Century? What a question. And in the studio now to tell us more, we have Dr. Tobias Winwright, who's Associate Professor of Theological Ethics at the University of St. Louis, Missouri. You're very welcome to the show, Tobias.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you and have you here in the studio as well. So, I mean, I thought the best way to start is, what is just war and the just war tradition?
Well, the just war tradition began basically in the 4th century A.D. It goes back to St. Augustine. Most people attribute it to him as being the first Christian theologian that started writing on this topic. And basically at the time, it was an issue that Christian theologians and bishops and other Christians struggled with. Can Christians be in the military? Can Christians fight and use force and even kill? And earlier, the answer was no. Christians ought not to. That was the general position of the church for nearly three centuries. But as Christianity became part of the Roman Empire and as it spread, there were more Christians who were in positions of responsibility and authority, and they wondered if that was appropriate or not. So Augustine began to say, yes, it is appropriate, but if it's only based on Christian love for your neighbor, so that you might use armed force to intervene on behalf of an innocent neighbor who is being victimized by an aggressor. And love is, it entails a duty then to intervene for that innocent person, but the love still is in place for the enemy, even because you're going to use force only as a last resort. You're going to use only proportionate force, not excessive force. You're not going to celebrate the enemy's death if the enemy dies. You're going to mourn that. You're going to have a sense of mournfulness about it. And hopefully it's all going to be a last resort. So he developed these criteria, these principles that were developed over the centuries by other theologians such as Thomas Aquinas, all the way to today. It's still a living tradition. That's why I prefer that word rather than theory. It's a living tradition that has been developing, growing, and accumulating more criteria with regard to when the use of force may be morally justified and how that force can be morally employed.
Right. And getting specific. So, I really appreciate the way you're using the word tradition. I mean, tradition, my understanding is you're learning from history through tradition. You're learning from the past. So a tradition of doing something a certain way. But, you know, we often talked about the 20th century, the bloodiest century on record. 21st century is looking pretty bad. There's war taking place and war that the Western powers, let's say, are very much involved in. Is this... just? Can it be just in the 21st century with the complicated political landscape we have?
Right. And that was a question that Pope Benedict XVI, when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, asked right before the U.S. invaded Iraq. He asked, can war even be just anymore? It was a rhetorical question. He did believe that armed force may still sometimes be a duty to intervene on behalf of the innocent in cases of genocide. But he did, by asking that question, recognize that war today and conflict today is much different than it was 1600 years ago. We no longer use swords. We no longer have standing armies that are marching towards each other with spears. We have weapons of mass destruction. We have bombs and drones and submarines and fighter planes. So it's much, much different than it was in the past. So that question is being asked seriously right now by many people around the world, including by the church at the Vatican. There was a conference a year ago in April by Pax Christi International and the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace that was questioning whether the church should even teach or use just war anymore because of how war is today. It's so brutal and it affects so many people, especially civilians. It's not discriminating as it was, you know, between combatants and non-combatants. And we have terrorism, and it's just much more complicated today. But actually, that question itself is a sort of a just war question. By criticizing how a bomb strike, I think I saw one just in the news this morning that the U.S. Dropped a bomb somewhere and it hit a school, killing children. To criticize that is actually using just war tradition, because lethal force, according to the just war tradition, you should only intentionally target and kill combatants. You should never intentionally target civilians. I'm not saying the U.S. intentionally targeted that school. It's probably collateral damage. It was unintentional. But the fact that we are so critical of any harm towards civilians today, that is actually growing out of the just war tradition, and it's an application of it. The just war tradition was meant not to just say when there is a just war, but it's also to giving these principles to enable Christians and others to say, no, this is unjust. This is not a just war. So it's also an instrument of critique.
So it gives you a context in which you can say, I suppose, in layman's terms, this is an imperfect world. War can happen, but it should happen in a context that we can actually put parameters around.
Right. And when it's not happening that way, we can criticize it, we can dissent from it, and we can hopefully hold those who violate the principles intentionally, we can hold them accountable.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of rules and conventions that have been put in place. I just wonder, has the tradition been sort of hijacked in recent years? It's a fascinating question when you look at, you mentioned the Iraq War, when you look at the whole concept of regime change rather than the sovereignty of a nation, and you know, how do we even start with,
right,
with these questions?
Well, again, in the tradition, the just war as it developed, it was tethered to Christianity very much so, and there was this sense that there was a communal context of accountability where people would be formed and shaped to adhere to these principles. And even when there were just wars in the past, those who participated in those just wars still had to go through practices of penance to be restored into community. About 200 years ago, just war tradition became more internationalized and secularized, became a part of international law, and some of the criteria dropped out, such as right intent, that the goal of a just war is to restore a just and lasting peace for all involved, including the enemy and the enemy's peoples. That dropped out, and just war became more of a checklist. Here's these criteria. Oh, let's tick these things off. Just cause, last resort, check, check. And it was kind of used to rationalize going to war, and many governments and others maybe used it as a smokescreen to just justify anything they're going to do anyway. That's been a problem for sure. And in recent decades, theologians have been saying that we need to get back to understanding just war as a tradition, one that is tethered to practices and virtues that we will adhere to and help us to actually adhere to these seriously and honestly. So that one of my teachers, he talked about we need just war with teeth rather than just war without teeth. Too much in recent centuries, just war has been without teeth. People just allude to it, but they're really not adhering to it.
Right. So you can sort of tip your hat to something without actually following the spirit of what it's trying to do. I mean, what about pacifism? I don't know. We could talk about this for hours. We haven't got hours. But the idea of, you know, in this book, the guy who wrote the introduction is a pacifist, but you're not. You would argue perhaps that just war is it can be just, but there are things about it which are problematic.
Right. So Stanley Hauerwas wrote the foreword, and he's a major Christian ethicist in America, teaches at Duke University, and he was one of my teachers. The other pacifist I studied with was John Howard Yoder at the University of Notre Dame, and they really believed that Christians ought to be pacifist, ought to be nonviolent, ought not to be in any profession that involves force, especially deadly force. Years ago, I used to be a police officer, and that's when I really struggled with these issues. As a Catholic, as a Christian, I really wondered if it was appropriate for me to be in a position that might involve lethal force. So that's what led me to want to study with these theologians, to really be challenged to think hard about them. They, at the same time, both of those theologians, they hope that those Christians who are not pacifist, those who believe that sometimes force is necessary, they wanted them to be honest and serious about it and to take the just war tradition more seriously than most people take it. So pacifism, it goes back to the early church, and it's been a very important tradition. And today, I mean, we've learned a lot from Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and Dorothy Day of the Catholic Worker Movement and many other pacifists that nonviolent strategies and methods can be very effective, can really lead to just changes in society. And I believe in that, and I support that. At the same time, I do believe that there may be a narrow scope or a small door ajar for when force, including lethal force, might be the only solution after other methods have been exhausted.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's so many applications to this in the modern world. Just as we're sort of, we could touch on a lot of things, but talk to me about modern weapons just as a as an insight. I mean, you've written on the idea of cluster bombs, and these are the bombs that, that drop down and blow up in different places, and some of them don't detonate. And your conclusion, I think, was that they're not just.
Is right. Well, there was a ban on landmines several years ago. Now there's been a ban on cluster munitions, cluster bombs as well. And the main criticism is that these weapons are inherently indiscriminate. That is, they cannot determine or distinguish between combatants and non-combatants. So with regard to cluster munitions, they are still actually being used, sadly, in Syria. And recently I saw in the news in Yemen by the Saudi-led forces. The United States has not signed on to the ban yet, nor have a number of other countries. But these cluster bombs, they are dispersed and they cover one or two football fields, really. And wow. Many of them do not detonate on impact, and they lie dormant for many decades sometimes, harming, injuring.
So a kid could walk up to it and it just goes off.
Yes, and many of them look like little toys or batteries. So 92% of the casualties from cluster munitions are civilians, non-combatants, and a high percentage of them are children. So I've written in this essay for the book about this family in Iraq after 2 days of bombing by the U.S., and these little daughters went out to fetch some water after the bombing had stopped, but saw one of these bomblets, didn't know what it was, and went back to their house, sat down on the floor of the kitchen, and it exploded. That is not an atypical story with regard to cluster munitions. Therefore, they are indiscriminate. I mean, their use, when you know at the outset that 92% of the casualties are going to be civilians, to use them, knowing that, I think, is recklessness and against the just war tradition.
Well, it's shocking when you describe it in those terms. I mean, just as a final question for you, this idea of the just war tradition of the sovereignty of a nation, that you don't want to interfere with the sovereignty of a nation unless you've got an evil force which is sort of oppressing the people and you've tried everything and then you feel that you should. Has the trust in that been eroded in recent years?
Right. Well, years ago in the 90s with Rwanda and then Kosovo, in international law, you were not supposed to intervene within another nation because of this respect for sovereignty. But the just war tradition, although it's been internationalized in international law, there's still a moral thrust to it. So the fact that so many civilians were being killed in genocide in these instances led governments to really wrestle with this. Can we intervene morally, even though we can't yet legally? So we used to call that humanitarian intervention. Today it's called R2P, responsibility to protect. And the United Nations has opened the door toward armed intervention in places where horrible crimes against humanity, such as genocide, are occurring. Because nations, they have a responsibility to protect their citizens. And when a nation is no longer protecting their citizens, but actually maybe even harming their citizens, they now no longer actually have sovereignty to be respected. And the international community has a responsibility to intervene. So this has come up with regard to Syria now, but that's complicated for many other reasons too.
Mm. Well, it's a hugely complicated issue, and I think you've done a brilliant job of explaining it, Tobias, as to laymen such as myself and to those listening. It's a real pleasure to have you in with us today.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.